Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Bob Dylan Archive hosts its first major public events beginning today with the Dylan on Film series, today through Saturday. The series kicks off tonight with the 10th anniversary edition of Martin Scorsese's No Direction Home at the Circle Cinema. Thursday, there'll be a Guthrie Green outdoor screening of Festival, Murray Lerner's 1967 documentary on the Newport Folk Festival. Academy Award-winning documentarian D.A. Pennybaker comes to Tulsa Friday for a showing of his Dylan doc, Don't Look Back. And the Circle Cinema will host several Dylan films, including archive performances ranging from 1963 to 2003 on Saturday. In addition, the first exhibition of physical elements from the Dylan Archive opens at the Henry Zero Center for Art and Education on Friday. The Ghost of Electricity focuses on Dylan's mid-60s career when he went electric at the Newport Folk Festival. I'm joined today by Dylan Archive curator Michael Chaikin. Chaikin is supervising the move of the archives to Tulsa and has worked with film archives of Norman Mailer, Nicholas Ray, the director of Rebel Without a Cause, and Pennybaker over the years. He joins us to talk about these events and what exactly is in the archives. Michael Chaikin, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
You've been working on a number of archives, but is this the first sort of sound-oriented, like a musician archive that you've ever worked on?
Yes.
And what attracted you to it?
Well, I've worked on a number of counterculture archives, so I have encountered some working papers of different singer-songwriters and a lot of ephemera and things like that, but nothing on this scale. The way I got into working with Bob's archive, I was working on another project, which was the archive of D.A. Pennybaker and Chris Hegedus. D.A. Pennybaker is a documentary filmmaker. He's been making documentaries since the early 50s. He's one of the founding fathers of direct cinema. He made the first feature-length documentary about Bob Dylan in 1965, Don't Look Back, which is now considered a classic of documentary film. And I was working on his archive. And Penny shot Bob in May of 65. That became Don't Look Back, which was released actually a couple years later in 1967. But Bob hired him to also shoot his 1966 tour, which is beautiful color footage, which you could, some of which you could see. Martin Scorsese used a lot of it in his film, No Direction Home. So Penny's career and Bob's career are so intertwined in a lot of ways. And as I was working on Pennybaker's archive, I was dealing with essentially Bob's office in New York, just trying to figure out, what we're going to do with the outtakes, because there was a lot, there's a ton, and all the film footage. And as I was working on Penny's archive, this was a couple of years ago, this was back in 2014, towards the end of me helping them kind of organize things is when, Bob's office said, you know what, I think it's about time we got serious about what we have here in the office. And they started to think a little bit more seriously about the archive. I don't know if the Pennybaker thing is what kicked it off, or they'd been thinking about it for a while. My feeling is they probably were, because they did a really fine job of preparing. They understood what they had. And I came in to essentially help them just organize it. I created essentially the document that was presented to the George Kaiser Family Foundation, which is essentially, it served as like a map in terms of all the different parts of the Dylan Archive. So I was working in between Bob's office, the archive agent, a guy named Glenn Horowitz, who I've been working very closely with over the past 10 years, and later the Kaiser Foundation. Kaiser Foundation came into the conversation pretty late in the game.
Right.
But so the jump off was really the Pennybaker archive.
Now you mentioned, I've done countercultural archives before. And when I think of archives, I think of people who are pretty meticulous about keeping their notes from a very early age. When I think of the counterculture, I don't necessarily think about that. So what has that process been like? Is it like, are we seeing lyrics written on the back of a restaurant check? Or
yes, a lot. And in Bob's case, tons of hotel room stationery, every project that I've been involved with is totally different. I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, some archives that I've worked on are absolutely meticulous.
The generator,
they understood this is of value, this is important, I'm going to sock this away. And then some archives are literally you're going down into the basement and it's like something out of a Hammer horror film, you know, and cobwebs, mold, God knows what else. So, you know, every situation is different. But, you know, the archives that you would think, oh, this is going to be anarchy, a lot of the times they're very meticulously kept. People who have archives are essentially pack rats, you know.
Right.
So it's like they box the stuff up and they never touch it again. So usually once you get into the boxes, things are pretty well kept. But I've been in some bad situations, a couple of like storage unit situations where there was like a fire in the storage unit and everything is smoke damaged and covered. So a couple of archives I've worked on have come out looking like I just climbed out of it. Down a chimney or something.
Right.
This was not the case with Bob's stuff. I'm happy to report.
He kept the meticulous record?
Yeah. I mean, it was surprising how much material Bob kept. The archive really starts to take on critical mass around the mid-60s when Bob moved to Woodstock. He had a home, you know, and he had a place to keep stuff. But then I think by the late 60s, Bob also, you know, had an office. And they were maintaining essentially the archives for him. I mean, clearly he had stuff, which he contributed to the archive, but a lot of the stuff was actually being kept by his office. And certainly all the concert tapes and the session tapes and the film material, all that was being held in storage.
Yeah, I would think a singer-songwriter would be very much akin to, say, a literary artist, yeah, in which, okay, maybe this song doesn't work out, but maybe this line will help me down the road. So I'm going to keep these, every lyric I write, every, you know, because it could be poetry, it could be lyric. And it may be helpful down the road, so there would be a sort of a vested interest in keeping a lot of that.
Yeah, 100%.
Even if it doesn't become a song.
100%. And you see that throughout Bob's archive. I mean, looking through his material, one gets a sense that, you know, he's a writer and constantly writing and has a real writerly discipline. And this is my sense of things. I could be totally wrong. But my sense was it wasn't like Bob was sitting down writing for a particular record. He was just writing. And so when it came time to record a record, he would kind of go through his cache of lyrics and he would say, okay, work on this one, work on this one, bring this one into the studio with me and see if we can do something with this, which is, I think, one of the reasons why he kept so much material, because it was all grist for the mill. And so he was writing and writing and writing and taking different things, because there's some songs that started in one era and then wrapped up or ended up on a record in a totally different era. And you see that a lot into the 80s and 90s. And I don't think he kept this stuff thinking, oh, this is going to be in a museum someday. I think he kept this stuff because these were his tools. These were his writerly tools. That's my sense of things, you know, looking at the papers.
How well do you think you can get to know the person that you're archiving through the paper and all the ephemera that they keep? Do you feel like you get a good sense of who?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, it depends. With Bob, I feel like one will get a very strong sense of what his working life is like. And, you know, a lot of the collections that I've worked on in the past, you come away really understanding the process and the work. You know, in terms of people trying to, like, crack the mystery of Dylan or the enigma, you know, I mean, some of that might reveal itself in odd ways, but, you know, the thing about Bob's archive, it really is an archive dedicated just to work and just the traces of how hard this guy works.
Well, you know, when you have an artist that is deceased, that's what biographers are doing with their archives, is trying to get a sense of who this person was through a lot of times just their working life and the things they felt important enough to keep.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in terms of archives that I've worked on in the past, and, you know, it's usually the letters and things like that. And, you know, Bob wasn't a voracious letter writer. I mean, he was out there writing songs and touring and stuff, and he probably just picked up the telephone to call people. But I worked with Norman Mailer for a little while, and he was a voracious letter writer, prodigious in answering 20, 30 letters a day. So, I mean, you're going to get a much larger psychological profile, I guess, looking at something like Mailer's papers. With Dylan, I mean, personally, I feel he reveals so much of him, you know, the truth of who Bob Dylan is are in those songs, really. And he's giving so much of himself in those songs. They are revealing, not in, you know, maybe the ways that people sometimes want, because he's never been totally, you know, direct. He's always kind of askew. But my takeaway from the archive was just how disciplined of a worker he is and how disciplined of a writer he is. And I think for Dylan scholars or people who are interested in studying this stuff, it's really going to turn Dylanology on its head because of all the books that have been written about Bob and all the speculation about the songs and what this means and what that means and how this was written. Nobody's ever had access to the archive. And, you know, over the next several years, this thing is really going to start opening up and it's going to give people a completely different perspective.
My guest today is Michael Chaykin. He is the curator of the Bob Dylan Archives. There'll be a film series taking place this week, Dylan on Film, and it also coincides with the first exhibit of material from the archive, The Ghost of Electricity, which I assume is that era when he went electric. It will open Friday at the Zero Center for Art and Education. Michael Chaykin is my guest. Well, give us a sense, before we talk about the exhibit, the first exhibit, how big is this archive? And I assume you're looking at recording, so you're looking at recording outtakes, you're looking at film, you're looking at all sorts of lyrics, as well as physical material.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I think when the New York Times piece came out, they were saying some 6,000 items, and, you know, I think it's probably more than that. I mean, some of it is hard to quantify because you're dealing with studio recordings, you're dealing with concert recordings, you're dealing with film materials, you know, a lot of 16-millimeter and 35-millimeter film material. You're dealing with every video format you could possibly imagine, every digital format you could possibly imagine, every, you know, hard drive. It's a lot. You know, just in terms of square footage, it would probably take a few trucks to bring everything down. So we're moving everything down to Tulsa in stages. I mean, the first stuff we've started with are the manuscripts, there's papers, the song lyrics, you know, because that's, I mean, that's where it all begins, right? The songs and him sitting down to write these songs. It's also the most manageable just in terms of what a traditional library, I guess, would expect, you know, a writer's papers and how to catalog and inventory that stuff. So that stuff is here, and we're in the process of kind of, we don't want to overwhelm, you know, the people at Gilcrease and the Helmreich Center. So we're doing it in stages.
But I assume you're digitizing every piece of paper?
Yeah. Well, the incredible thing about Bob's archive, which I have to say is different from almost every other archive I've worked on, is I would say something like 80% of the archive had already been digitized.
Wow.
And I'm not talking about the paper. I'm also talking about the film material.
The recordings?
Yeah. And which is absolutely incredible. And, you know, when you're talking about the film material, you're talking about stuff that was shot, a lot of which was shot by Penny Baker in the 60s and Howard Alk in the 70s. And they were shooting on handheld cameras, 16-millimeter with non-sync sound. So you have to sit at a steam bag. You got to sync up all the sound. This is tedious work to sync everything up and then digitize it. But Bob's office has been doing that for the past maybe 10 or 15 years. It's interesting because a lot of the material was digitized around the making of Martin Scorsese's documentary No Direction Home. And that was a project that has its roots in the 80s. So they were doing interviews, they were digitizing stuff. So I think, and that film, which we're showing, it's actually the opening night film of the film series, is archival in nature because they're dealing with a lot of documents, a lot of photographs, and a lot of film material that people have never seen before. So that process, I think, helped immensely in terms of them understanding what it is they had in the archive and also just getting it digitized. So, you know, we have the luxury of being able to bring this stuff here and already have, because that's a, you know, have it digitized, because that's a huge expense.
Well, and when you're talking about audio recordings, you're talking about 40, 50-year-old technology. Yeah. If you go back to the 60s,
yeah.
I hope that's all digitized because, you know, the tape has got to be deteriorating.
Yeah, yeah. It's also
so you don't have any like pressing emergency materials where you
haven't come, you know, the studio tapes. I mean, the other side of the thing, besides the Scorsese film, as I imagine some of your listeners are aware of, if they're fans of Bob, is there's been this ongoing bootleg series, which has been this continuing series which started at some point in the 90s of unreleased recordings, and they focus on a particular period of Bob's career. Bob is unique among modern recording artists in that he owns his own master tapes, which is what gives them the ability to keep this ongoing series happening. The last one was released late last year. And, you know, it's important for them to kind of understand, when I say them, I mean Bob's office and Jeff Rosen, who's his longtime manager who's been curating this series, to understand what is it that we have. I mean, what is it that's here in the vaults that we could release? And so, you know, that side of the business or that side of the work has kind of helped us because they've been digitizing everything. What's incredible about the archive is that every time Bob stepped to a microphone to record a song, all those songs on the record, we have the session tapes for all those songs. So
that means everything from the banter in between outtakes to things that don't go well to the one that became the finished master.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And it's so granular that you can get down to the stems. If you want to listen to isolated tracks, if you just want to hear Michael Bloomfield's guitar part or something like that, you could isolate it to the point. But people ask me a lot, like, so what, you know, when is this thing opening? When is this thing happening? And I mean, the archive is essentially, it's working on two fronts. The first front is the research component, getting all the materials here, getting a catalog, making it available in the next year to writers, scholars, students. And that work is being done at the Helmreich Center, which is immediately adjacent to the Gilcrease Museum. Down the road, maybe 2 years, 3 years from now, there are plans, and we're just starting to talk about this, for some sort of Bob Dylan center. And that's going to be more of the public face. It's going to be some sort of a cultural center where we'll have kind of exhibitions kind of moving in and out. And not just Bob's stuff, but other things. That
people
might be
of his era.
People of his era.
Or people who are following in his tradition, maybe.
Exactly.
Contemporaries.
Exactly. And you know, exhibitions based on, you know, some of the things that influence Bob. So that's kind of the long-term plan, is there will be some sort of Dylan Center in Tulsa. Right now, my job has mainly been getting the archive here and helping to set up the research component at the Helmreich Center. And the fact that so much of this material has already been digitized is incredibly helpful, because it basically means, you know, if somebody wants to come in, if a writer comes in and wants to look at all of Pennybaker's film material from the 1966 tour, well, we're not going to sit them down at a steam bag with the original film reels. We're going to have them sit at a computer station. And there'll be a, you know, a drive or a server. And since all that stuff has been digitized, you could essentially just sit at the station, almost like, you know, you're playing your iTunes. And, you know, you could look at reel 3A, you know, the uncut reel from this date that Pennybaker shot. And if this stuff wasn't digitized, that would take years.
Easily. Yeah. Well, you mentioned the film series. This kicks off tonight with that Martin Scorsese film. And then it's going to be going on through Saturday. Mm-hmm. What are some of the highlights of this film series?
Well, I mean, for me, they're all highlights, right?
Yeah.
The screening of No Direction Home is what we're calling the 10th anniversary screening, and essentially is later this year. I mean, I guess I can announce this. There's going to be a Blu-ray release of the film. It had never been on Blu-ray before, with some additional extras. And so we're going to be showing the DCP, which is this new kind of digital restoration that they made, of the film on opening night. It's actually, we moved it. We moved it to Circle Cinema. It was going to be at Lorton, mm-hmm. but we had to move it because Lorton can't project a DCP, so we want to show it. You know, they went through the trouble of making this new digital copy for us, so we want to show it so we could have the best possible picture and sound. So in terms of highlights, you know, D.A. Pennybaker is going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure if he's been to Tulsa or not. He's been making films a long time. I'm not sure if he's ever shot anything in Tulsa, but he's going to be here with his wife and filmmaking partner, Chris Hegedus, which, I mean, this is just a very strange coincidence, and I promise this was not planned, but the night we're showing Pennybaker's Don't Look Back, which we're also showing in a brand new DCP restoration, and this is the first time that DCP is going to be screened theatrically. The same night we're showing that on Friday at Circle, they're opening Penny and Chris's new film, Unlocking the Cage. They have a new film that just came out, and
wow.
So it's premiering the same night that Benny...
And they're going to be here.
And they're here. So they're going to be on double duty. I think they're introducing and doing a Q&A for the new film, Unlocking the Cage, and then they're going to introduce, or Penny's going to introduce Don't Look Back, and then we're going to do a Q&A afterwards. For the hardcore Dylan fans, Saturday you don't want to miss, because we are showing some things. Well, we're showing one thing that is seldom screened. It's called Eat the Document, and it's a film. It's actually the first film that Bob Dylan directed from footage that Pennybaker shot, which is only screened publicly maybe two or three times. And it's kind of a strange.
It's a child of its time.
It's a child of its time. That's a good.
1966.
That's a diplomatic way to put it. It's a very strange travelogue. It's kind of Bob's take on documentary filmmaking on his 1966 tour. So we're going to be showing that also in a new transfer. But the final program that we're showing Saturday, which I believe is at 9:30 at Circle Cinema, is we are editing, or we've edited. I'm kind of putting the finishing touches on it today, but we've put together a program of material in the archive that has never screened publicly before. And there are things that, you know, even hardcore Dylanologists will probably be scratching their head and saying, where did that come from? So, you know, we're showing some things that maybe people have seen, but I guarantee you've never seen them in the quality that we'll be showing it Saturday night.
40 years of performances, too.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing that we're editing together kind of spans 63 to about 2003, maybe a little bit later. We're kind of, you know, we're trying to edit it down so we could kind of fit everything in time-wise. But there's some really incredible stuff there. There's some stuff that really nobody has seen, you know, with the exception of people in Bob's office. So it's going to be fun. And we want to try to keep it kind of informal. So I think I might be emceeing the thing in a way. I don't know how that's going to turn out. I might irritate people. I don't know. But but we figured instead of just like having people sit down and just show it all in one shot, I would essentially give little introductions.
You're going to curate it.
I'm going to curate it.
Exactly.
That's the title. Yeah. I got to live up to the title.
Now there's also an outdoor showing of Murray Lerner's festival, that's which right. is at I guess Newport. Newport.
Yes.
Folk?
So yeah. Murray's film is. Murray Lerner is a fascinating guy. He's made some incredible films. He made the Isle of Wight film. He made just a standalone film of Jimi Hendrix's performance at that concert and Miles Davis's performance at that concert. But he was one of the original producers of the Newport Folk Festival. And he filmed the 63 Festival, 64 Festival, and 65 Festival.
What was the year that Dylan went electric?
It was 65. So it was July of 65. And so Murray filmed all three of those festivals. And his film, Festival, with an exclamation point, which came out in 1967, is essentially, I don't want to call it a compilation, but it's all three of those festivals. It's the highlights from all three of those festivals, including Bob going electric in July of 65. And it's a really beautiful film. And it was edited by Howard Auk, who ended up working with Pennybaker. He was Pennybaker's second cameraman on Don't Look Back and then worked with Bob. He helped Bob edit the document and then later was one of the cameramen on another film Bob directed called Ronaldo and Clara. So it's a really incredible document of its time, and it's not just Dylan in the Newport film. You got Johnny Cash, Son House, Joan Baez. It's a beautiful film.
Yeah, and that's the Dylan on Film runs Wednesday through Saturday at various locales, but a lot of them at the Circle Cinema. And coinciding with that will be the first public showing of material from the archive. That's called The Ghost of Electricity. I assume this is around 1965, 66,
yes,
when he goes electric.
Yes.
What will people see at the
right.
exhibit?
Just to step back. So the announcement of the archive came in March of this year. And, you know, the idea of doing this film series and showing some stuff from the archive was to, you know, to really let the community know that,
right.
that this is really happening. Since it's in the process of coming to Tulsa, and it's moving in stages, and we're cataloging all the stuff. We really wanted to do something in the fall to let people know, no, this is for real, you know. And film, just because it's a communal thing and it's a popular thing, it's going to bring people out. We figured, okay, this would be a good way to just kind of celebrate this stuff. But we also wanted to give people just a taste of some of the things in the archive, to give people a sense of what the texture of the archive is like. So, yes, The Ghost of Electricity, which is a line from Bob's song Visions of Johanna, which is on the Blonde on Blonde record. Since a lot of the films, this Dylan on Film series certainly isn't every film that Bob was involved with. There's several others, which we hope to show, you know, as this thing moves forward. But the films that we're showing this time, a lot of them center around that 1965-66 period. It's also, you know, the anniversary of the 66 tour. So just seemed to make sense
you know, let's do something kind of around the films in that period, which is a fascinating period and a rich period.
It seems to be well documented.
And there's a lot of material in the archive that relates to it, obviously. So we're going to have a handful of papers and artifacts, including the original song lyrics to things like Maggie's Farm, which is the song that Bob opened with at Newport when he went electric, the original lyrics to Subterranean Homesick Blues, which opens D.A. Pennybaker's Don't Look Back, with Bob standing in the alleyway behind the Savoy Hotel with his cue cards, throwing out cue cards with the lyrics to the songs. So we've got some song lyrics. There's a typescript of Like a Rolling Stone. So some of the manuscripts with Bob's hand on them from that 1965-66 period. We have Bob's editing notes from Eat the Document, including which is really interesting, a statement that he wrote about the film's intent will be on display. In the archive, Bob kept the leather jacket that he could be seen that he could be seen wearing throughout Don't Look Back, but was the leather jacket. Essentially, it was like his armor that night at Newport in 65. So yes, the leather jacket he wore on stage, which you could see him wearing throughout Don't Look Back and in Mary Lerner's Festival, that will be on display. We have Bruce Langhorne's tambourine. I know this talisman. Bruce Langhorne was the tambourine player who actually inspired Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yeah, right.
He is the tambourine man, Mr. Tambourine Man. So we have his tambourine. So that will be on display. Throughout Don't Look Back, Bob, you could see him at a typewriter, like frantically punching out something. And what he was punching out was essentially his first book, this book called Tarantula, which is this compendium of poems and free associational prose and short stories. And the archive has maybe half a dozen iterations of the manuscript of that book. So on display will be one of the first iterations with Bob's corrections, which you can see, again, you can see him typing it out throughout Don't Look Back. So you'll actually see the original manuscript. We also have things like the work permit. Like when Bob was in London and Penny was filming him, you know, he needed to get like clearance through the Ministry of Labor.
Yeah.
So we have the, you know, Bob's work permit from, you know, May of 65. So all this stuff will be out. And, you know, it relates to this period of Bob's career, which is a very pivotal period, but it also relates to some of the things that you're going to be seeing in the films.
Yeah.
And so that's what we kind of tied it to. And yeah, The Ghost of Electricity, you know, that was, you know, the title, of course, refers to that moment where he went electric, but also, I don't know, maybe there's some ghosts that are haunting that leather jacket. Maybe there's, you know, in that tambourine, maybe there's.
Well, you can see the films this week as we celebrate this amazing acquisition for the city and really for scholars from around the world that will be able to come to Tulsa and look at this material. We wish you great success with the archive, Michael, and thanks for joining us.
Great. Thank you very much.
Of Johanna have now taken my place.
Michael Chaikin is the archivist and curator for the Bob Dylan Archives. The Archives hosts its first major public events beginning today through Saturday with the Dylan on Film series. In addition, the first exhibition of physical elements from the archive opens Friday at the Henry Zero Center for Art and Education, The Ghost of Electricity. For details on that and all of the events this week, visit bobdylanarchive.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
He sure got a lot of gall to be so useless and all, muttering small talk at the wall while I'm in the hall.